Welcome, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost. I am back. So Tomek is back, and we are here to discuss the WCW, not the Wrestling Federation, but the World Championships of Warhammer. And we are going to discuss it from the European point of view, because all the Americans have already recorded their podcasts. They have already discussed everything that was there to discuss from their point of view. So we are now going to discuss it from a little bit different point of view, from over the pond sort of point of view. And to do that with me, I have two wonderful gentlemen who are joining me from Germany, who actually placed in the top 10 of the WCW, which is no small feat. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give you, in random order, Arne Zernt. Hi, dude.
Hello.
And Valentin Schefter. Hi, Valentin.
Hey.
Right. Top 10 of the WCW. Out of all the players, you managed to get to that spot. What a story to tell. Let's not, beat about the bush. Let's get to the nitty-gritty of it. Or actually, before we do, I just need to do a couple of announcements. First of all, we've mentioned this many a time, but I'm going to do this one more time. We are on Patreon. If you want to support us, if you want to see more interviews like this, masterclasses that we have done and that we are doing and that are on the way, you can support us via Patreon. You can join our Discord and so on and so on. There are many perks. Go to Patreon. The link is in the description. And see which perks you want. And then choose the tier and join us. We will be very happy to have you. And we will really appreciate your support. Second of all, we have two sponsors that I need to mention and thank for their support. So Army Painter, who is supporting us all the time and has sent us some amazing paints. So you will see some amazing work done by Vitalis and Weyland Yutani, with whom we have a deal, so to say. If you buy something using the code and the affiliate link in the description as well from their website, so amazing terrain and mats and so on, we get a little bit of that as well. So do support them because they are supporting us. With that out of the way, let's get into the interview. So, gents, again, as I said, what a story to tell. Let's start from the very beginning. Arne, let's start with you. Tell us something about you. Tell us a little bit about your gaming history and then how you happened to win the golden ticket to get to the WCW. So, yeah, let's start with your story.
All right. Gaming history, I think I started playing 40K like way back, but took a super long break after, like, played in school, took a long break, and I kind of got back into it in like end of 2019, right before COVID hit us all, and then got back into it through Tabletop Simulator, actually, because I was always struggling with like having all the models to play the armies I wanted to play, and then I found out there's this fancy tool where I can just play armies regardless of my allowance allowing me to buy all the models and having the time to paint them, and then started grinding that way too much, and kind of just played a lot online. And then, you know, like after COVID, I started actually playing like proper tabletop Warhammer, and you know, just started doing a bunch of tournaments and enjoyed it a ton. And that kind of escalated pretty quickly into attending basically any event I could attend, being a mercenary at the WTC for Belgium, attending every like German major and bigger GT I could go to. And then that's kind of also how I got my ticket, because I actually just got it at the start of the year for placing top five in the German rankings. So I was fourth in the rankings at the time, and the top five in the rankings got a golden ticket at the start year. So I basically just had one from the very start. I later on won an event that would have given me one, but then passed over to the second place and got real close to it at Adepticon 2.
That's amazing. That really shows that it was like well deserved. You actually confirmed that you do deserve the golden ticket with another victory, which is great. And then I think you also came to the Polish team championships and you won one more, or is that the wrong assumption?
Exactly. I think that's more Valentine's story.
Valentine's story. All right, so let's switch to Valentine really quickly. So, yeah, how long have you been playing? And how did you win the golden ticket?
Yeah, I was starting playing 40K in back in school, also like when I was 13 or something, with Black Reach with the Orcs against Space Marine box. This was my first Warhammer box. I started with the Lord of the Rings miniatures to paint and stuff. This was like my first experience
Same here.
in with miniatures. Yes. And then I had like I moved from Berlin in a small town, so I had to drive like 16 kilometers by a bike to play once a week. And like this goes on for a year, and then I stopped playing because it was too much for me in this time. So, and then I'm started when I was 16, seventh edition started. I started again, and then I played actually tournaments and stuff. And I was like right on the way to go to WTC. So if I had played for one more year, maybe this would be. I was in the contact with the guys. My group there was like the German WTC players and stuff. But then I stopped again playing because yeah, like my age, so I go to party and stuff. So I turned away from Warhammer for a couple of years, and yeah, and now I'm back, and I live back in Berlin, and started playing when the Tau Codex came out, like 1.5 year ago. It came out on my birthday, and I was like, this is a sign. I'm a Tau player, like seventh edition. I only play Tau. I have like 30,000 points of Tau.
Jesus.
And then okay, this is a sign. Let's try it again. And it hooked me again. And till then, I'm just playing 40K for like 1.5 year now. And yeah, this is like my run. And my ticket we got together from the Polish Team Championship. So Mason invited us, Mason, Duda, Liam, Arne, and myself. And I was going there and didn't know that we could win the ticket actually. So I went there in the hotel room. They told me like, yeah, we can win the ticket, and nobody wants it because Liam already had one, Arne had already had one, and Mason and Duda didn't want to go. And I was like, oh, okay, if we win this, I can go to the world championship. And I was like, okay, nice, let's try this. And then yeah, the trophy's right there, so we won it. And yeah, I was very happy with this. But like also there was a little bit of pressure on myself because it was a team tournament and like all the high stakes player and me. So but I think I worthed myself, or how you kind of
Yeah,
call
you
it.
proved
So
yourself.
I proved myself. Yeah, this is what I wanted to say. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only Polish event where you could win a ticket, and then you came, you saw, and you conquered, and that's just amazing. It's pretty cool.
How did Leshu got his ticket then?
He went to the Czech Republic, I think, to Prague. Maybe no, sorry, it was not Prague. It was this year. It was in Slovakia, I think. So there was like another team tournament that he attended in a team with, I think, Vladi, Skark, and I can't remember the rest of the names, but like other Polish guys, and he won it in Slovakia.
Okay, I stole the Polish
Nice.
ticket and he stole the nice.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. That's how it went. That's how the European people do it. They just nick it from someone else. So yeah, but it's still an amazing story, an amazing feat. So yeah, you have my admiration for it. Now, when you, I mean, as you mentioned, there were some Polish guys who potentially could have won it, so Majson, Duda, but they refused to go. So I don't know the exact reason, but I can imagine that for a lot of Polish people, it's just a burden, a challenge to actually muster the money, muster the funds, and so on to go to the United States and play over there. There might be some other reasons, obviously, as well, but in general, it for a Polish person, it's just a challenge to organize that. Was it in any way challenging for you? Maybe not in terms of finance, but in terms of mastering an army or something like that. And then what did your preparation look like? Arne, let's start with you again.
I mean, US trips are expensive. I did get a sponsorship for my trip, but these are, it's still like just being in the US, I makes me feel like I'm like, you know, this word I just cannot translate, but like being in the US makes me feel like a geringverdiener. It's like,
I can't afford
anything.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, so we had like we went to an Asian restaurant and I had basic curry with tofu and rice. And we're like, yeah, that'll be $30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had tap water to drink with that. I didn't pay for a drink. It was like, oh, food and tap water, please. $30. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, yeah. So being in the US can be a burden on my wallet in that way.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
How about army wise? So army wise, did you won the ticket? And did you know already that okay, I'm gonna be playing for high stakes. I just need to take like the strongest thing there is. Or do you actually have an adorable story about how you've been playing Eldar for 20 years and it has always been your dream army?
I mean, so 10th released, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we all saw the Eldar book, and everyone who could rub two brain cells together went like, this is broken.
Yep.
So my first event of 10th edition, I won with Eldar, was the Alpine GT over in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Went 6-0 there. Then obviously played WTC right after that. But for WTC, someone else was running Eldar, so I had to learn something else, and I learned Thousand Suns. And then played some Thousand Suns some more after WTC, and then they got nerfed. And mm-hmm. obviously Eldar also got nerfed repeatedly, but Eldar don't care. So I kind of had this thing of like, well, it's Worlds, right? I'm not going to mm-hmm. try to like be cute and show off how I can make something work with Drukhari, which is probably like my, if you can call it a main army, that would maybe be my main army staying on the shelf over there. But that hasn't seen a tabletop yet in 10th because yeah,
you know.
So I went like, okay, I wanna try my very best to win this thing. And so I'm gonna play the strongest army I can field.
Makes sense.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's why it's Eldari.
All right, Valentin, how about you? How about you? Firstly, you know, you won the ticket, so have you mm-hmm. immediately started thinking, like, how am I going to do this? You know, getting to the States, booking the flights, whatever. And then what influenced your choice, your army choice? So why Necrons?
So first, the, like, organizing stuff. yeah, I won the ticket, like, not that far off the date, but, like, not 1 year in advance like other yep. people had. So I was like, okay, I had to book this like relatively quickly and stuff. And also Arne and the Breaking Heads guys, Malte and Fred, they were going to be in Atlanta 1 week in advance at Thomas's house from Tabletop Life or Pro Tabletop, who know them maybe. And I was like, hey guys, can I maybe join that? So this took a while to like organize everything. And then mm-hmm. I got like, okay, you can come with us. And I was, yes, nice. Okay. Then I booked the flight and stuff. So, and I just wanted to see a little bit from the US outside of being playing 40K. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I took this out of my way. And then from my army choice. So, when 10th edition dropped, I was already in the WTC team, and I was main Tau player.
Mm-hmm.
But we relatively quickly decided that Tau isn't a choice this year. So I tried something else, and then we couldn't like find a real spot for me, and this took a while. And then we came to Necrons, and mm-hmm. I played Necrons and grinded them in preparation for WTC. And I'm not like the player who swap around armies. I have 3 or 4 armies, and I try to collect every single stuff to the maximum of 3. So if I want to play this army again, I have everything set it up. Mm-hmm. So, and I really try to grind the army I'm playing currently to get behind it and stuff. And then I grinded Necrons from start of the 10s till now. And this is like my way. So on the Polish Team Championship, I played the close exact list to the list on the team the championship. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was easy my choice. If I'm going to go there, I'm going to play Necrons. Turns out the meta shifted in my direction actually, because Elder's the top army. I'm a natural counter for Elder, especially now after the nerf from Devastating Runes. Mm-hmm. And also the Space Marine Codex came out. All the Space Marines got a little bit away from their Grasshopper and got fancy with detachment and MSU stuff. So I like this a lot. And also like the Warrior Bomb just murders other armies who are not like able to kill them in one turn. So yeah, this all turns out good for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I played a little bit guard in between because on the Pyra Cup, we were 2 weeks in advance from the championship. We thought like Necrons are not going to be a good choice. And then I played a little bit of guard, but was okay, but didn't got behind it and like found some flaws that I didn't want to try out on the team the championship. So I stick to Necrons and I'm happy with it. I really like the army and how it turns out.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. So to set a little bit of like the context for the event, how do you assess the meta going into the event? So both of you are playing top armies. I think the Necrons are also up there, although they do have probably a bit fewer favorable matchups than the Elder do. But still, top armies. Going into the event, did you feel confident? You know, let's talk about the meta first, and then let's talk about like the assortment of players at your groups at the event. How did you feel going into that? So Arne, again, let's start with you.
Yeah, so meta-wise, I was expecting quite a lot of Space Marines, and then obviously a ton of Eldar, and obviously Chaos Space Marines. I was thinking before the event that the best pick for the event, like meta-wise, would be Chaos Space Marines. I think they just had the best matchup spread going in, because they don't have those one-off, I literally can't do anything matchups like Eldar do with Necrons. And then they just kind of, they can kind of beat anything if played properly. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't have the reps, right? I knew I was practiced and knew what I was doing on Eldar, and I did not want to like, I'm someone who likes to army hop, but, I know how like, I knew the level of competition would be too high for me to army hop and perform, right? I needed something where I had a bunch of tournaments under my belt. So I kind of was like locked into either Eldar or T-Suns. And I just felt that Eldar had more raw power. From like matchups perspective, I actually think that basically everyone was prepared for Eldar. I don't think you register a list for the World Championships of Warhammer that you're like, well, I can't beat Eldar, but other than that, it's fine, right? Because you're just going to be expecting like 30% Eldar, and yeah, you can't register that kind of list. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went into it going, well, everyone's going to be prepared for Eldar, but there's being prepared for Eldar, and there's actually playing against Eldar on the tabletop, and I can make the latter really difficult. So that's kind of, I guess that's kind of the confidence I went into it with. And I played 3 or 4 events with Eldar in 10th edition so far, and made sure to play like there's Pyra Cup, which was 2 weeks before we left. And then there's Raccoon Rumble, which is the weekend before we left. So I played like 11 rounds of tournaments with almost my exact list that I played at Worlds right before leaving. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just went like, I'll just practice well enough to be fine in the meta.
Okay. So was there any specific army, and if not army, then any specific player that you knew that you could face and that potentially could be a threat?
Yeah, sure. This guy here, Valentin. I don't have a good plan to beat Necrons. It basically boils down to I can stand on a marker with all my Wraithguard and then like Yinkarn or Warwalker or something somewhat durable in the center and just make it so the warriors can't get onto the marker.
On the objective. Mm-hmm.
And then be like, hey, I can hold on to two markers, like one with all my army and then the second one in my backfield. And I'm just going to try my very best to outscore you on secondaries. Because you're going to like, it's going to be like 50 to 40 on primary. And then if I can outscore you on secondaries by at least like 12 points, then, you know, it's a game, I guess. That works in theory until the Necron actually comes and just kills my entire Wraithguard. And then suddenly it's no longer winning because, you know, that army isn't just durable. It also randomly does damage sometimes. But yeah, Necrons is really rough. Other than that, I don't think I had a shot at Manijima, honestly. I think his list, the triple accursed cultists, are just too many
horrible
gribblies for my army of bright lances and wraith cannons and stuff like that to deal with.
Yeah, too much good truth.
Too much quality shooting to deal with all those one wound idiots. Yeah, I think that's kind of like the things I didn't want to face.
All right, okay.
GC is probably really hard too.
Valentin, same question to you. So, is there anything that the Necrons specifically didn't want to face, and then how were you prepared to tackle it?
Yeah, there actually is a lot that Necrons don't want to face. So, this is obviously a team list. Originally, so it had some outs. Like the things I fear the most in is like 20 Orc boys, aggressor bomb, terminators from the Votan, and something like that. Like 10 chosen and accursed cultists undivided. Also, like a nightmare for me. So this is all the stuff I was like scared about, but also. In all the games I played, since I played this list, every time I play against someone on the tournament or even a test game, I got the feeling that people never played against like this kind of list or this kind of Necrons before. So I had this for my advantage. So, and this actually I realized this on the tournament as well. So most of the players I was like playing against was like, okay, what is this doing? And then they started to try to kill me with the army that is not able to kill me. And then, so if they try to kill me one or two turns, this game is most of the time just over. So they have like one shot, of, like Arne said already with Elder, if they block one marker and try to win by secondaries, they can maybe do it. But this is, it's very, very hard, even if you know exactly what you're doing. And I did know what I'm doing with this army, so because I played it like for 3 months now, and this was in my advance. I looked at my pot, and obviously, yeah, this was group eight, and this was very hard. And I don't want to down talk this, so this was a really hard group. But I'm trying to not like look at the names. I like just look at the lists, and even don't like look at the mission and stuff. Normally when I go to the tournament, I go to the table, I look at the mission at the table and at the person, and then I start to play. And there were like three lists that was very scary for me. This was the 30 chosen, so 3 times 10. Then there was one aggressor bomb and one Black Templar player who had 22 big blobs. And Leshy's list as well, but then turns out, so it was hard for me, but not that hard that I like imagined in my head, because the Deathwing Knight I like overweighted into me, but they didn't do that much damage in the end. So
after all,
this was like a fine matchup, but yeah, this was like the three matchups I didn't want to play. And otherwise I was like, there are 7 Elder. they're just elders, so I can play against them. This is obviously a good matchup. And so I was, yeah, mm-hmm. I looked like, okay, going to this and just play Warhammer.
So. Yeah, yeah, all right, okay. So I need to ask, because I listened to StatCheck before the event and after. So I listened to Innes talk about his list and also the list that Nassim Fushain took. They both opted to take, I think, the same list, which involved planes, for example. Planes that you haven't really seen before this event, but in their particular case, they took planes because of the kind of terrain that was being played at the event, which was GW terrain. We in Europe are used to mostly WTC terrain. I mean, you know, continental Europe. So we are used to a little bit different density of terrain and different kinds of terrain. Did you adjust your lists in any way like Innes or Nassim did? Or did you just go with your usual lists that you knew really well and didn't tweak with them too much? Arne, let's start with you.
So I did make one change. It's about 300 points I shifted in my list from playing WTC terrain to GW terrain, and it's
so
a
maybe,
drop.
Maybe let's go through the entire list, and then you can indicate what the change was.
Oh yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So what I ran at the World Championships of Warhammer was Eldar, obviously the standard four characters. So that's a Phoenix Gem Autarch, Fuegan, a Spirit Seer with Fate's Messenger, obviously in the Wraithguard, and a Yinkarn. Then triple Night Spinner. And then my kind of screening package was one unit of Rangers for forward deploy and scout blocks, one unit of Shroud Runners, and one unit of Swooping Hawks. So that's less kind of runaround screening than people are used to from Eldar. But then I basically swapped two of the more screening units for two Warwalkers,
mm-hmm.
Who still get out there quickly with their scout move and still screen somewhat. And then obviously the Wraithguard. So the change here from my previous list for WTC terrain was, on WTC terrain, I was running a unit of five Wraithblades. It's kind of something that Duda inspired me to try.
Mm-hmm.
And it was working super well on WTC because they would just like walk down a ruin on one flank, right? And just sit there in a ruin and just completely hold an entire flank of the battlefield. And people would like waste activations and units and effort into them. And at the end of the game, it'd be like, yeah, so one out of five still alive, whatever. But they just randomly tanked like half an army mm-hmm. for no reason. And then I realized that on GW terrain, this would only work on maybe half the maps at most. Because very often the side objectives just weren't inside a ruin. So mm-hmm. they would have to just stand in the open on a side objective. And they aren't actually durable enough to like stand in the open and take like Forge Fiend shooting or something like that. They just want to like stand in a ruin and be a nuisance and make people commit into them. So I decided that because the objectives are a bit more open and because the tables I can generally draw more angles and get deeper angles into deployment zones, I wanted the Warwalkers. This was also an inspiration from Matthias Bellmann, who I believe got the idea from Malte. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of came full circle there. So it basically is like a thing into Chaos Space Marines as well, where the 19 inches of movement turn one on the Warwalkers, they can go really aggressive, really deep, and you can try to snipe out the Rhinos, because the Rhinos are such a big problem in that matchup. The other changes, because the Warwalkers, this basically required a little bit of shuffling around, right? And opened up some points. So one of my Swooping Hawk units upgraded to a Shroud Runner unit because I had an extra 5 points. Mm-hmm. And the Shroud Runners were super fun because people keep trying to kill Shroud Runners with like, they're like, ah, it's an 80 point screening unit. It's just three bikes. I'm just going to use like it's these easy five idiots here to kill these. And then it's like, all right, here's a multi-melter, two shots. It's like, oh, it hits on fives because they're stealth.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, and they have an invuln. Yeah, okay, that's awkward. All right, well, here's all my bolters afterwards, so that'll still get them, right? Right?
Well, no.
It's like, there's nine wounds of three up armor and cover, and no, sorry, you're not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
and they're OC2 each, so they just, like, I just randomly had them hold objectives from opponents, like, oh, they stand on your marker, do you want to disembark your fighting units to kill them, or do you want to try it through firing deck? And they're like, no, I don't want to disembark and get Knightsbanned. All right, try it through firing decks. Fail
Which
to kill.
Which is obviously always not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool tool to have.
They were super fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Valentin, same question to you. You said that it's almost the same list that you took to the WTC and so on. Yes. So again, any tweaks with regards to, like, specifically terrain, for example? Or is it just a list that you that marches forward, tries to hold the objectives, and it plays the same on any kind of terrain?
So just to get this one out of the way, I didn't play this list at WTC. At WTC, like, I don't want to talk about my list from WTC. But this was a completely different list. So my list is, like, there's a core of, like, 1,700 points. So there's not much to play around. So you need to have... So I go over my list and then I tell you what the thing is to play around. So I have 2x20 warriors with crypto thralls and one ghost arc, one catacomb command barge, one chronomancer with the veil of darkness, Orican the diviner, and the reanimator. And then that's basically the core. Then I have
Seras.
Oh yeah, Zeras, of course, yes. Oh, he's a beast. And the Transcendent Satan with 4 up Phenopain. This is the core. And then I had in the list also Imhotep the Stormlord, one lonely Technomancer with the Lone Op and 10-inch move, and 10 Praetorians with pistols and swords. And I took the Technomancer in the list for especially this terrain, because on WTC terrain, I almost every time can hide my Catan in the middle and do teleport homers all day long, and the opponent cannot actually attack them. There are not many units that can kill him with one activation, and most of the time the whole army has to activate into him to kill them. So if he stays there behind the wall, he will score 15 points and I will be fine. But on this terrain, I needed another unit that can go make teleport homers in some matchups. And I don't want to put the Titan into there. So I put the lone Technomancer into there. And also, he's nice in some matchups to put in the warrior unit to swap them out with the Chronomancer. So the -1 to hit is worse than the Phenopain against some units, like the Cursed Coltus. Mm-hmm. My odds get slightly better when I put him into the unit, so I maybe can withstand the charge from them. So this is, like, the idea. And then I put Imhotep in the list in exchange for the Royal Warden with -1 to hit, because I didn't expect it, like, to be shot to death, but to be fight to death. So -1 to hit isn't that that problem for me. Also, the battle shock is only really good against Tyranids, and I didn't expect that many Tyranids, so I swapped them out. And also, I started to play fixed every time, so I needed the additional CP from time to time, especially with the Praetorians, because they're like my countercharge unit, and they're like the unit that kills the Titan if he comes in. They're very reliable on doing that, with in addition with my Wrath of the Army, because in the Elder matchups, I got the feeling that if the Incarn is placed well into my backfield and I cannot really screen it out because I want to get on the table and stuff, this can be a problem, because he can... From turn on, he will snipe every character from my backfield, and then it's this matchup gets hard. So he can pick assassinations, or he will spike out of control on secondaries, and also, like, my defensive buffs go away, and apparently the warriors can die then and stuff. So I wanted the tool to remove the Incarn if he goes onto my backfield, and they're very good for that. But also they need CP for rerolling wounds to rapid ingress and stuff like that. So I put Immotech in the list as well. So yeah, this was like my tweak for this. Before I played the heavy destroyer with the particle gun and a lord with veil on them. So I had like a unit that can shoot a unit to death. And this was especially on singles for the aggressor bomb and for Tau, because they have 18-inch range with where very effective. So I can wail with an 18 after they killed my first unit of warriors. So then I can cripple or kill the unit that killed me and in hope that they only have one unit that can kill one unit in activation. And so in the, my second unit of warriors is unkillable from this moment on, and then I can play the game. So this was my plan with them, but the patterns turned out to be much better in like counter charging chaos space marines and stuff, but they're gonna die against aggressors. Aggressors in the land raider, there's no chance for me. They're I'm just gonna lose this game.
Yeah, I guess many armies have that problem with that particular build. All right, so in a moment we'll get to your games, but before we do that, you got there, you got to Atlanta. How was it in general? How did you feel? Did you have a lot of time to get adjusted to, you know, to the jet lag and so on? How did you handle that? Because it is a completely different time zone. It's a completely different climate. It's, you know, far, far away. So I don't know. How did you accommodate, let's say?
Maybe, Valentin, do you want to start here?
I want to start.
So you want to talk about the US here.
We got adjusted. I can tell you that. So we got there and like the jet lag on the beginning was fine. I think every one of us had like one day. So the travel to this is like really nice. We like sleep for a couple more hours and then wake up late and then go to bed late for 2 days and then everything is fine. Mm-hmm. The second day, we all feel a little bit tired and stuff, but after that, everything was fine. But then we all got ill. So Arne got ill on the like first day. Then myself got ill and Fred, only Malte tanked everything. So he was fine every day. But I was like laying in bed for 2 or 3 days.
Oh, shit.
And yeah. So, but we got this out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. So when the tournament started, I was like, mostly fine, and like Arne and Fred, I think was fine as well. But if this hit us like in the first or second day of the tournament, this would be over,
a disaster.
Right? So yeah, this was like the adjustment for us. But and the AC got us.
Oh yeah,
this we are not used to this. This was
I could feel that last year when I went to the States. It's crazy. Like everywhere you go, there is like a wall of cold when you enter a building. So
it's also weird. Like it was, I mean, we were there in November, right? This is like a few weeks ago. It was November. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like in my mind, it's like, you know, you have your AC on in the summer.
Yes.
And then in the winter, you turn on the heater instead. Or, well, if you're from Germany, you just don't have an AC in the summer. And you open a window like normal people. And then you have your heater on in the winter. And there it's like, oh, yeah, it's winter. So we have the AC on. And I was like, all right, that's a choice. So when we all got sick, we turned off the AC in our room at least. And I feel like that helped already.
Mm-hmm.
That was an experience for sure.
But besides that, we had a very great time at Thomas's house. We I played only 4 games, I think, in the whole week. But like every day, there came different people over, and we talked a lot. We played a lot. This was very nice time. So, and we got used to the climate and also the like jet lag stuff and so on. And I think this was a good week in advance to be there and like also talk English all the time. This is like good for me personally, because I want to learn English to speak faster and stuff and like better. And this was a good experience for me as well. And
I remember I don't know how many years ago, 2, 3, maybe even 4, I watched Tabletop Tactics and their story of going to the LVO. And I think Lawrence Baker, he said, yeah, we had the plan, which worked out perfectly, to actually travel to Las Vegas a week before to adjust to like the conditions, the jet lag and so on and so on. And then, you know, to go into the tournament at like full strength, etc. I really don't envy those people who didn't have that time to prepare, because I can imagine that that was painful. I heard that the people from Asian countries really had a problem with adjusting to jet lag. So
they have the thing when we came back, right?
This was the wrong way around.
There was
like jet lag going to US is fine. Jet lag coming back from US is not okay.
There was a point like 3 or 4 days ago where I went to like, it was 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning. I was like, I can't sleep. I slept for 2 hours and then I woke up and go to the kitchen and made something to food. And then, okay, what's going on Discord? Oh, okay. Arne, Malte and Fred were there and like talking. I was like, hey guys. And then we like talked for an hour and was like, okay, we're all jet lagged.
And the best part was like half of us were already awake again. And half of us had not yet gone to sleep. We were just all completely off.
Yeah, it messes with your brain.
I tried to fix that in advance on the flight back. I didn't sleep at any flight. I stayed like up for like 30 hours, I think, in total. I was like sleep walking at the end. I didn't like when my girlfriend picked me up. Every person who goes by me, I was like, "This is she." This is she, but this was random person. I was like, okay, I have to go home now. So this is the worst. Yeah,
the brain is refusing to work and compute. Right.
Cannot recommend.
Yeah. On that note, we're all super thankful for Thomas to basically just invite us over and allow us to stay at his house for like an extra week before the tournament. Because turns out none of us could have just like paid a hotel for an extra week to just chill in the US for an extra week. But hanging out at the Pro Tabletop Team House and hanging out with all the people and just had a great time there. It was super awesome. So big props to Thomas and Tabletop Life there.
Yeah, for me, awesome. Thank you very much, Thomas. Again.
So a question from me, I wanted to leave it till the end, but actually we can tackle it already. So what's your overall assessment of the event, and do you think it's going to become like a regular thing? And then if yes, should it be like a, I don't know how to call it, like a mobile sort of thing that travels around the world with the players? Would that make life easier for players like yourselves? Arne, let's start with you.
So on the will it happen again, I'm pretty sure it will, because they said so. And the top 8 from this year got tickets for next year. So
sweet.
I don't have it yet. But physically, at the awards ceremony, they said that we are already reinvited for next year, both of us. So, as far as that is concerned, I'm pretty sure it'll happen next year. And they said it'll happen at the same location. Now, what I would prefer would be for it to move around and, you know, maybe be like, you know, half the time somewhere US, half the time somewhere Europe or something like that. I don't know. Just, you know, I get that leaves out the Asian countries pretty badly, but there's also like, I think the community is pretty much mostly Europe and US based.
And many European players simply didn't go because they couldn't it financially.
Australia also, so there was...
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah. Once in a 10-year in Australia, maybe.
So I'd love that. I also feel like just from like a purchasing power perspective, like it would be really nice to just have it in a more... in a less expensive country the US. Because flights to Atlanta are pretty doable. It's super easy to get direct flights to Atlanta from most places in the world, or like with one change. But Atlanta itself is really expensive. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have it somewhere where the food and the hotels are more affordable. But yeah.
All right. Valentin?
Yeah, for me also. It was like, I thought in my head the flight will be the most expensive thing from the whole trip and stuff. And I was like, okay, $500, this is going to be fine. And then I looked for the hotel. It was like 3 days for myself, like €700. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. That cannot be true. And then we found an Airbnb with two other guys for like $300. And this was like, okay, this is fine. And then we started to buy food. And this was like, what's going on here? So, yeah. I was a student this time. So I'm not this like, I have not this much money. This was like, yeah, this was a lot of money for me. I got sponsored. So at this point, yeah, thank you to the Polish community again for like sponsoring me. The ticket, so to make this possible for myself. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I just wanted to say that. Yeah.
Sweet.
But yeah, this I would prefer to that it goes around the world, like the W2C used to do that. So mm-hmm. before when they called ETC, they're like moved from country to country every year. And I think this is like a good concept to like get accessible for everyone,
yeah, and affordable yeah. and so on.
Mm-hmm. Affordable, this is like yeah accessible and affordable, yeah.
All right, okay, so GW, if you're listening, you know what to do. Now let's just conscious of time, let's briefly talk about your games. So maybe we can go like one by one, so we don't have one person speaking for a longer time. So Valentin, this time let's start with you. So maybe you can tell us about your first game, okay. You know, highlights, how it went, good game, bad game, etc.
Yeah. My first game was against Jason Sparks from Canada. He played Elder, and this was a good matchup for me. And he like wasn't really used to the matchup, so this was a nice game and this was a good game. But there, yeah, this game was very quickly over. He like killed my whole backfield, but the Warriors stand on every objective, and I like. Charged his home marker on turn three, and the avatar had to go backwards all the way back to the home marker to control it at the end of the game, and this was like the game. Yeah, but yeah, it was a good game. Over to you, Arne.
Yeah, so my first round was versus Tau Brandon Valley. I'm not 100% on that. It was a super heavily converted Tau army, like it was all Kroot. Instead of Tau, and it was like, you know, Kroot in the battle suits, Kroot everywhere. The broadsides were huge Kroot ox things with railguns strapped to the sides. It was a little bit confusing, but mostly very pretty. Yeah, the game was... This was maybe my only game of the tournament where that felt a bit more like a normal GT game, because... It was kind of like the Tau went first, tried for some stuff, rushed at me with piranhas, shot at a bunch of Night Spinners. Was kind of like two piranhas here at a Night Spinner. Oh, they didn't kill it. One piranha here at a Night Spinner. Oh, it didn't kill it. Oh, yeah, so that didn't work out. And then, like, okay, piranhas got killed. Yinkarn teleport, went into the Crisis Brick, ate the commander, blah, blah, blah. Chain reaction. Everything's terrible. Tau never saw the game again. So it was kind of like a. I don't know, mm-hmm. kind of game, but yeah, the matchup
first game
also
of the tournament.
Yeah, and the matchup is also terrible for Tau. So, mm-hmm. yeah,
so unlucky for them. Yeah. All right, okay. So no story, no longer story there. Valentin, let's get to your second game. This is going faster than I thought.
I think it will get longer in the end. I think.
Oh yes, it'll get longer.
So my second game was against Steve Trimble from USA, and. He played one of the scary lists. He played the 30 chosen, so 3x10 chosen and rhinos, Chaos Space Marines, and like couple Forge Fiends and Obliterators. So this was a very scary list for me. And I think we played the Ritual and what was the second? Scrambler Fields or something. I like took the make sure in advance that I could. Spawn an objective and cleanse at the same time. So I could like be defensively, do my thing and had the like secondary advantage. So he had to come to me. And then I screened out all my backfield with one unit, and he got all of the chosen out of the rhinos in turn two and tried to charge me, and then but made the mistake to shoot at me first. So all the screen goes back to my home base, and he only had like 10-inch charges left. And one unit actually made it to my ghost arc, killed the ghost arc, but then I like tabled all the chosen in two turns with my Praetorians, with warriors. They rode back. Zeras is stepping guys. So, and after that, I came back into the game, controlled every mark at the end, and yeah, won this game. Actually, this was like a pretty big win for me because this was one of the scary lists out of my pot. And so more like Elder on top I can like reach now because I'm the 2-0 bracket. So this was a huge win. And in this game also, I think there was an advantage for me that he didn't know the matchup exactly. If he like didn't, if even if one unit of Chosen stayed in the Rhino, I think I can win the game because then he can come out and push me again into my backfield and I never come back to the table. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, continue.
No, this was a huge win for me in this. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to say,
it was a good game, yeah.
And comment, like, it's interesting how the American meta shapes up and where the Necrons are there, because it seemed to me when we went to the LGT to cover it in at the beginning of October, it did feel, I mean, this is the UK, but it did feel like everyone perceived Necrons as a solved army and everyone knew how to tackle them. So at the LGT, first of all, you didn't see a lot of Necrons, and then you didn't really see them perform well, the players who were there. So it's interesting to you know, delve into that, whether the Americans also assumed that maybe Necrons aren't going to be that popular at the event, and then got surprised because actually skilled players brought the army and did damage with it.
I think like after the balance status like hit, there was like a 2 or 3 or maybe even 1 month period where like people thought Necrons will be the strongest army in the game now.
Yeah.
And at this point, everybody was trying to tackle against Necrons, and Necron player was like, oh, this is not going to work out. And then like 2 weeks after, everybody realized the Necrons are not the greatest army in the game now. Like, they're actually very good again, because like I said, nobody's like tagging against them anymore and stuff. So I think they always had their shot, but in this particular time after the balance started slate, they were very bad, because everybody was expecting, like Elder did in the tournament, they did great, but also, everybody was taking for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct. All right. Arne, your next game.
Yeah, so my second game was against Terroxer from Spain. Mm. And that's a really fun one because it's a rematch of a rematch of a rematch. The two of us have played a few times.
You have a history.
And yeah, we have a history. And that history starts back when, like, well, he's always been on T-Suns, and I've been on a bunch of things over time. But that history mostly starts back when T-Suns were really good against Harlequins. And I had a really hard time facing him back then. And since then, the story has gotten better, because at WTC, I played the T-Suns mirror into him and really got him there.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it was obviously Eldar into T-Suns, which is a really, really complicated matchup and is super cool. Like, I could play Eldar versus T-Suns all day. It is super fun because both of the armies are like crazy in what they can do and how they have to like mind game. And like, you know, it was actually, I kind of want to go into this one in more detail because it was so fun. So he deployed his Rhino inside a ruin, where it was covered from the front, but there was an angle to get it from like the far back. And I kept my Warwalkers for my last drop, so I put the Warwalkers all the way on the flank, and then rolled to go first, and then pushed both the Warwalkers like the full 19 forward, basically stand on his DZ edge, and just look diagonally down his DZ edge into his ruin, and I sniped his Rhino turn one. And then in that rhino, there was the Exalted Sorcerer on Deus Connect, tried to kill that guy with a Night Spinner and failed, but decided that because at least he's slowed now, I'd rather slow two more units and limit his plays on turn one than try to just kill that one guy. Because if I leave all the other units unslowed, he still has enough ways to get to me. And the interesting thing in that matchup is that basically the Wraithguard are a liability, because he can just turn off their armor save. And at that point, most of his, like, his Infernal Master will kill multiple Wraithguard easily. Magnus basically one-taps the unit at that point, even, like, indirectly through Warp Sight and stuff like that. The damage that they put out is crazy into me. But on the other side, the damage that Eldar put out into T-Sense is crazy as well. So it's super volatile, super explosive. Mm-hmm. There's a chance that, like, turn one, I kill the Rhino, kill the Exalted Sorcerer on disc, pop in the Yinkarn, and just, like, eat two more characters and everything goes terrible for him. But there's also a chance that, like, you know, I don't get it, and he gets his turn and just insta-pops my Wraithguard, and I play 420 points down. So it's super fun. He then, on his turn, steps out the Exalted on disc 10 inches. And basically, because, you know, I've played a lot of T-Sons, I measure out and I know that if he moves them forward again, he doesn't quite reach the Wraithguard because I slowed him. But he can, because of Lord of Forbidden Lore, he can double move them twice. So at that point, he would reach the Wraithguard. And then he would have the 2 CP to do Warp Sight, and he would have the extra 6 Cabal points to do full reroll hits on Magnus, and he could, like, try to one-shot the Wraithguard like that. So I basically, like, we go back and forth in his movement phase on, like, okay, so if you do this, I can Phantasm like this to prevent it. If you do that, I can do this. And in the end, I choose to hold my Phantasm and keep the CP around instead. He then goes for a different play, where instead of sending the Exalted forward, he realizes that because Magnus is so damn fast, moves 14, he can just double move Magnus, where he first moved him to the left flank, kind of making me think he wouldn't go that way. Then he moved him another 28 down to the other flank instead to get a line from him on my Wraithguard. And then went, all right, Magnus can now straight up see you. I don't need to spend the 2 CP on Warp Sight. So he goes, turn off the armor save, gives him full rerolls. He's in the sustained hits mode. And goes, all right, here, he's going to one-shot your Wraithguard now. And he shoots. I'm like, all right, 1 sec. 1 CP, go to ground.
Oh, so I my Wraithguard, no one ever uses.
Drop in the dirt and get a 6-up invuln. And because I'm Eldar, great. 6-up Invuln means I'm going to Fate Dice a save, and I'm going to Fate's Messengers flip a save at least. So he goes, and he would have killed the whole squad with the activation he did. But I rolled one save, I Fate Diced one save, and I flipped one save. So I have 3 Wraithguard alive at the end, instead of 0.
Eldar fuckery.
Oh, it was great. It was glorious. So at that point, because he had the direct line of sight, 3 guys shoot back at Magnus and do 5 damage. So then he's like, oh no, I threw it. Because he thought he had him, but he didn't realize I could go to ground and get an invul. And
yeah, again, it's not a very common thing to see, I guess.
It's a very rare stratagem, but it's the one that, like, basically, the reason I know it is because I played so much T-Sons, and I'm always worried, I always have to worry about, well, I can kill this, you know, but what if they give themselves an invuln and blah? And, like, this was really important in the T-Sons versus Necrons matchup, where if they had the unit with the Feel No Pain, you could turn off the armor and they would have no save at all, but then they could go to ground for a 6-up invuln, and suddenly the math changes a lot on whether you can kill the Necron Warrior Brig. So they survive, they shoot 3 times, it goes to my command phase, I grow one back, 4 of them shoot Magnus, he's down to half-ish. Gets shot by, like, you know, some stuff, a grenade, Yinkarn Flamer, ends up just dying in the shooting phase because he decides it's not worth investing a bunch of stuff to try to save him when I've set up, like, Yinkarn 1 inch from him to charge him right after. And then at that point, obviously, I'm way in the lead because I've basically traded, like, half the Wraith Guard for Magnus, and they'll regrow. And then the game kind of snowballs a bit from there. It's the Night Spinners are alive, one of the Warwalkers is alive, the Wraith Guard start, like, they basically spend another turn sitting there and not daring to move out because he still has an Infernal Master who can just look at them and tell them to go die. But it was like these first two turns, we probably spent like half the game time on just those first two turns, and it was glorious. One shout out to the Shroud Runners, who were engaged in a running battle with the Mutalith Vortex Beast for four turns or something. Jesus. Where they kept being like shot at and charged by the Vortex Beast and then leaving for 14 inches and it runs after them, shoots them, charges them, and they leave for 14 inches.
Cue in Benny Hill music.
Not die.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It and, sounds amazing. Sounds like a game that should have been on screen.
Oh, that would have been a great stream game.
Yeah.
We had such a blast. Tarkser's also just a lovely guy. So, yeah.
All right. So, thanks for that account of the game. Valentin, your turn. Game three.
I played against Colin Power. He played Elder as well. And the game went like every Elder game I controlled. So this is going to be short again. I controlled every objective at some point, and then like I snowballed from my primary. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This was very simple. I killed the Incarn with the Praetorians like I wanted to. And this was. But I want to mention in both of these Elder games, like in the first game, the Incarn ported, and I have this once per game ability from Imhotep the Stormlord, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he does like on the 2 up, 2 to 5 D3 mortals, and on the 6, D3 plus 3 mortals to every unit in 12 inches, enemy unit. So mm-hmm. The Incarn comes in, I'm like, okay, my next turn, I will use this ability. And the first game, the Incarn is on like 10 wounds or something. I'm like, okay, on the Incarn, 6, 5. So 6 mortals to the Incarn. He was like, mm-hmm. Oh no. And he was on 4 wounds or something. And I killed him easily with the rest of the backfield stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the game against Colin Power, the same thing happened. So the Incarn comes in. I was like, okay, so I will use this ability. And I rolled a 6 again and then a 4. So 5 mortal wounds to him. And then also Orican is in the same unit, and then if he does like 5 or 6 mortals, then Orican goes in Super Saiyajin mode for once mm-hmm. again, and then he will like kick the Incarn to death with the mortal wounds. This is like how do it normally, but like the D6 mortals, D3 plus 3 mortals from Imhotep is not that reliable, so I need the Praetorians for mm-hmm. do this job safely. So, but
yeah.
In both of these games, he's like, you get a lightning bolt over here. So, yeah, this was nice.
Yeah. Awesome. All right.
I also, this happened in the game against Arne. The same thing happens. Not like he got D3x wounds, but he was on 3 wounds or something, and then
mm-hmm.
he stepped in his fight phase, he stepped into the 12-inch aura of him. I was like, in my command phase, okay, we'll activate this and see what is left from the Incarn. And he was like, zoop, dead again. It's like, this guy had like killed 3 Incarns in this whole tournament.
That's yeah. amazing. He definitely like earned his points back.
Yeah, of course.
Sweet. All right. Since Arne disappeared for a moment, let's go into your next game, which was against Leshu, I think.
Yeah, this was against Leshu. He played also, in my mind, one of the scariest. I think still it's like an evenish matchup. This is not like he cannot kill me at all. And it's also like I cannot go control every objective at all. So, yeah. And this was, by the way, like the best game I had on this tournament because we had like the cleanest of conversations about the game I ever had. Like, in this whole tournament was like, okay, I'm going to do this and I want to do this. Okay, nice. So let me help you. This was like, there was no misunderstanding or anything. This was so clean and nice.
Yeah, yeah. She was just a gentleman. So
yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
This was great.
Mm-hmm.
He had like the Inceptors and stuff that could like deep strike in my backfield. And I was a little bit scared about it, but also was like, okay, I cannot screen it out. Do whatever you want. And we had the mission where the middle objective disappears. doesn't get set up. There was one objective. He had the infiltrating Deathwing Knight on, and we're both at a big home ruin where I put one of the units like 1 inch away. So on the GW rules, you couldn't charge through walls if you body block it. So I body blocked my whole home ruin. So he didn't have advance and charge, so with the 17 inches he never could reach in one turn on my home objective. So we had a three turn standoff with my home ruin and him, and on the other flank I pushed the other unit in front, and I got the other objective always 17 inches away from his stuff, and then he made secondaries in my backfield. I did secondaries in the midfield. And we fought around the other objective. And then at one point, I I rapid ingressed my Praetorians and tried to charge his home base. There was Centurions in front. And I wanted to charge them. And he had the thing where he can move away if I'm going to charge him. So he's 1 CP. I'm going behind the wall. He rolled a 6. So I was like, oh no. We didn't measure it, but it was a long charge, maybe 8, 9, 10, something in between, and I rolled 11. So, okay. And with 11, I also could get all the way on this home objective, and they tagged the Centurions and also the Whirlwind or something, and I kept the home objective from him. So I stole the home objective for 2 points. I got it next turn for 6 points because he wasn't able to kill them, because I killed also one Centurion. He didn't have fallback and shoot and stuff. And there was only Ezreal fought a bunch of them, but wasn't quite enough. So this was a big swing in this game. And this snowballed me the win, I think, the situation. And Sweet. Yeah, and then he had to try something and pushed the Deathwing Knight into me. But then it wasn't enough to kill them in one swing. And I still controlled the objective and stuff. And yeah. This was the game. Yeah. But this was a very nice game. Very good game.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome to hear. Always rooting for the Polish WTC team at any event. So yeah, it's nice to hear that at least they put up a fight. Arne, your game number 4. And I don't know if we have the time to talk about all 8 games, because that's it's going to take another hour. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this one, and then maybe just a highlight from the other games, or anything that you want to highlight from your games, because big names are coming. So
yeah,
let's do it this.
I think that skipped game 3, and game 3 was way more interesting than number 4, so I'll take one instead.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So game 3 versus Oliver Weiss, great French player. He was playing a Black Templar Firestorm, and it was a really interesting list with 6x5 Crusaders, which apparently are tactical Wolverines with a bunch of special weapons that only cost 65 points for a squad of 5, which is totally reasonable, and I don't see what's wrong with that. So it's 6 of those and 3 Rhinos, and then the Land Raider with the Aggressor Bomb. And it was just a glorious game because I went first. I pushed him immediately with the Warwalkers, as I do when I play against Space Marine vehicles, and just kind of went, all right, they walk 19 down this flank. They see your vehicles. They're going to they shoot open a Rhino shoot a vehicle, wound another vehicle, blah. He rushes into them. And he had this moment of having to decide, does he either try to play a tactical game versus Eldar, try to do minimal exposure, try to use his whirlwinds, try to not engage in the full fight. And he was like, no, if I try to play a tactical game, you'll phantasm the one thing I expose to and blah, and it'll all be bad. So I'm just going to give you 7 places to phantasm all at once. And he just hard pushed me everywhere. So I was like, okay, the obvious places I phantasm forward with the Wraith Guard, because I don't care about saving one of these screening units. And then we just had a glorious brawl. And I want to say I killed almost the entire army in turn 2, but it was still somehow the score was close, and it was really cool. And the Shroud Runners lived on an objective against a Rhino with 2 units of Crusaders in it, because the Crusaders didn't want to disembark for 2 turns. So yeah, it had all the things that I enjoy about 40K, which is a crazy brawl in the middle, Wraithguard getting to shoot like four times in a game, and, you know, all a bunch of crazy plays. It was glorious.
Yeah, and especially, I think it's worth noting that Oliver is like the captain of, or was the captain of Team France this year at the WTC, and he plays the game like a professor. Like, I've seen him play at the LGT. If you have, like, to our listeners, if you have an opportunity, a chance to go back to, I think, War Games Live channel on YouTube, find the LGT and find the game that Oliver played on stream, you could teach 40K looking at the way he played. Like, he, as I said, he plays like a professor. He has all those like 9-inch rulers that he whips out, like, I don't know, 10 of them to like measure where the Inceptors are going to come. And he is an inventor of lists for the Space Marines. Like, he took, he was the first one to take the Black Templars to the WTC. That set a tone, together with Leshu's Land Raider with the Aggressors, that set the tone for how the Space Marines are supposed to be played. Basically, these two gentlemen like introduced the proper way. So yeah, that's definitely a name that you should recognize and follow. And Arne, congrats on like defeating him, because it's an absolutely amazing feat.
Yeah, he was fun to play as well, and he was super clean about everything, as you said. And he the first thing I saw is like, he shows up and the first thing he gives me is like, here's my list, and then on the back I have all my gotchas written. That's and it's just like this kind of preparation of like, here's all the like weird things that my army does that you're not used to. They're all written down for you here. It's just it's exactly as you say. He just has that like preparation and clarity. Mm-hmm. And then fourth game was against a teammate of his, Pierre. I'm not going to try to pronounce this French last name. Pierre. He was on Ironstorm Space Marines, Dreadnought spam, and that kind of just went a lot worse, because it didn't have all the runaround Crusader units, didn't have all the OC, and I bullied him really hard on primary, won both flanks, and just bah.
Mm-hmm. I know this feeling, bullying someone on primary.
Yeah, it turns out like Dreadnoughts, like if you have two Dreadnoughts versus 10 Wraithguard fighting over an objective, the 10 Wraithguard win.
Surprise.
And if you have one Dreadnought versus like the entire rest of the Eldar army on the other side, the rest of the Eldar army also wins, because it involves Fuegan and two Warwalkers.
Yeah,
and then that was kind of the
attack of the Dreadnought.
So that was kind of that. So, Valentin.
Game 5 we are now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, my game 5...
Group stage.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we are still in group stage. Oh, yes. The first two games, like, made the hope that we go fast through all the games. And now, like, guys, hurry up. Mm-hmm. So, the like group final was against Liam Hackett. He's actually the inventor of the list I played. So I like made a little tweak, and with the Praetorians he plays Nightbringer instead, and the the Royal Warden instead of the Imhotep. So this like the difference between our list, but he played this list at WTC, and like I saw the list and I played the list after this. So I was looking forward to this game, because this was like, this was a little honor for me to play against him, so the inventor of the list. So this game was actually interesting game-wise, but so I had to start and played Killmore and Holdmore. And in my mind, like, going first in this matchup is a liability, because the opponent can use the Veil first, and also I cannot really push onto the objective, because if I push on the objective, even with my advance, I cannot like go over the middle of the objective to put enough models on it. So if I go not on the objective, I will just lose, because I don't do primary. If I go too far on the objective, he can charge me and get far more movement, so he will control the objective for the rest of the game. So this is like, I don't think we're going to be first in this mission, especially with Killmore. So we both cannot kill each other most of the time, but they're like a single unit that can be killed. Like my lone technomancer who had to screen out the backfield and stuff, this can happen, so there are like possibilities to get a kill more, and this is very bad and like going first. So but I played fixed and he played tactical, and I think the game came down to him playing fixed and me playing tactical, because I had like the CP advantage with Immotech and also like the safe scoring. I had like engage and teleport homer. I put Zeras in the middle and blocked out the middle objective with my unit and him in the middle, so he cannot grow and reap over it. So I had the middle objective, he had both objectives on the side. So on one he was very clearly, so with the whale unit I wanted to push one objective, so he had to charge with the whale unit to get it, so he cannot veil, and the other objective to push, so he cannot go with the other unit, so he cannot veil. And also I have one objective in the end. This was like my plan. This worked out, but he got, I think, one or two times hold more. But in the, I got one epic challenge on his Royal Warden. So I get kill more. Then he killed my Technomancer. So he got one kill more as well. So this goes back and forth and backwards. Mm-hmm. So, and then. But he had like picked tactical and we both control objective and there's nothing to kill. There's like nothing will be in the, so there are plenty of objective that cannot be scored. So I think in this end, and you always put yourself in the position where you can draw bad cards, right? So this turned out to be good for me. And in the end, I won by 1 point. Yeah, mm-hmm. This was a very, very close game. Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Okay. Adna, you're next game.
My round five was Curie, Jeremy Atkinson from Team Canada. Mm-hmm. Awesome guy. I know him outside the event as well and talked to him a bunch. And we were kind of arguing back and forth on Votan lists on Discord, mm-hmm. like earlier. And it was really fun because like I had one style of Votan that I preferred, and he had this style of Votan that he preferred, and then he played it against me, and I was like, so I won, but I also told him that he was right about the Votan. So I think he had a moral victory of like, yeah, me being like, all right, you've proven it, that style of Votan is better. But mm-hmm. also, and then later that day we were sitting together working on the Votan list to like iterate on it, so that mm-hmm. was awesome. He's a great guy, and the gist of it is we played Killmore Holdmore, and Eldar is significantly favored into MSU Votan on Killmore Holdmore. Mm-hmm. He got Holdmore once, I want to say, and then he didn't get a kill on the last turn at all, so I got Killmore there, and I got Killmore basically every turn.
So you had a score of 90,
So I think I scored 60 some secondary primaries in that game, mm-hmm. but sadly it's capped at 50, whereas he scored 36. So big primary lead, but he was playing deploy, teleport homer, and cleanse, and he just put down a cold 40 on deploy cleanse. It's like, wow. Went first, deployed in my DZ turn one with bikes. And just went like, all right, I'm going to get this every turn. Turn two, walks warriors into my DZ, and he had so much stuff in my face that I just did not have the activations and the units to go pick up every single one of those little five-man warrior squads and the bikes and the blah. So you just put down like 40 flat on secondaries, and I had a 10-point secondary disadvantage because I could only do 30 between behind enemy lines and deploy. Because I basically missed one tick of behind enemy lines and I missed one tick of deploy. And I got my first behind enemy lines was a 3 and my first deploy tick was a 3. So it was kind of mm-hmm. like, he put so much pressure, I couldn't get all my secondaries. I got back there in the late game, got like the 15-15 on my secondaries. And so with the 14-point primary lead, I ended up with a 4-point win. Mm-hmm. Which it felt like it could have been a bigger margin just because the when I was writing down the primaries, I was like, oh, I'm up by a lot. And then I realized, oh, I'm 10 over the cap. I'm actually not up by that much. Mm-hmm. It's not a 14-point win, it's a 4-point win. Yeah. This could have gone bad, but it didn't, and the mission is just very favorite for me. But honestly, on many other missions, he could have easily beaten me with that list. It's a very strong Votan build. I'm very convinced by it now.
Yeah, and so, it feels like something that many people are sporting now. By the way, I don't know if it was just me or, like, I'll have to check the recording later, but at some point where you were talking about the game, I had some network issues, so I missed out on, like, the bit of the game. I don't know if, Valentin, you saw the same, but...
I had the same problem, and I saw, like, your screen was blowing out.
To anyone who is watching this, and if you missed that part, I'm very sorry. I don't know what happened because I'm on cable, so that shouldn't happen. But from time to time, it does. So, apologies.
I hear the story, so...
So at least something. So maybe it was just me. Valentin, your next game. Out of the group now, right?
We both have...
We share that game. One.
Yeah, we can share this one. So we had the pairings the night before playing, so in advance. So we was like, oh... this is going to be paired. But then also we were like wondering if there went something wrong because like there was two British player, two German player, two US player, and they were all playing against each other. And this was also true for the like groups, the other stage, like not the top eight. Mm-hmm. So everybody, like half of the Germans was playing against each other. We was like, there's something wrong. This is going to be fixed tomorrow. But then apparently this was not wrong. This was just random. So... yeah, we had to play the next morning, so I think you knew this was going to be a matchup. I knew this is going to be a good matchup, but also it's like, yeah, we both there. We are living 20 minutes away from each other, so we play on a weekly basis. And we actually don't play that much, but we'd like talk a lot and like see us from a regular time. And so this is going to be a nice game, but also it's like, yeah, I don't... yeah, we like, I got you on the assassination, I think. So you was like trying to hit me on secondary, but you only had like the Rangers and the Shroud Runner to and the Swooping Hawks to really expose to my backfield without using characters. So I choose Teleport Homers and assassination to go to like... what's it called? To go on higher ground on secondaries. So if you win like by not that much, if I win by not that much on the primary, I will still win. So this was like making sure. And then you try to like block out one objective. I got an angle with the Zetan from the midfields and epic challenged the what's it called? The Spirit Seer. Turn one, so the Spirits here and I think three or four of the Wraith Guard died turn one. This was so, like I just wanted to get the Spirits here and then they all disappeared.
You went first, so this was top of two.
Yes,
but yeah,
I put the Titan in the middle to make teleport home, and you pushed on the other objective in the middle.
Yeah, so from my perspective, what it felt was like was I kind of the misfortune of facing Necrons, and then I had the misfortune of, and I was like, well, if I go first and I slow both the bricks and I push up hard onto one marker and I control it completely and I make sure he can't, like, I can get some primary ticks in before he inevitably overruns me. And then there's a chance, right? I can, you know, and I was like, I know that generally you like to play the flip marker, the storm hostile objective plus deploy teleport homers combo. So I was like, if you do that, I can hold one marker really well until eventually you'll get it. And if I'm really good about it, I can step off it the turn where I know I won't be able to hold it anymore. So you don't never get that storm hostile tick. But that's like kind of hard, that's a lot to ask. So more likely is you get like 4 to 8 on Storm Hostile if I play well and I never touch any of the other markers. And then I was kind of like, if you do deploy, which I can't really prevent you getting a 15 on that, your army's just built to always get 15 at least on that. I can in my mind, I was like, I can hold you to like 23 secondaries, or maybe if I'm lucky, 19. Yes. So now I have to get like 36, 40 secondaries. So I went behind enemy lines deploy, and I was just like, I don't have to fight the Necrons, right? Fighting the Necrons is useless. I just have to jump in their backfield and try to make you turn around your Necron Warriors units so you can't push as hard towards me, because you have to also clean up in your backfield. And that was kind of the plan going in, and you kind of had the next level over it, because you were like, all right, Arn is going to try this because he knows how my Necrons play, so I'm not going to go for Storm Hostile because I know he can play against it. So instead you go for Assassinate because you predicted I would go for the deploy behind enemy lines. And then you also went first, and you also rolled fives on both advances, and you were just perfectly on all the markers. Yeah. And then I was like, all right, well, this is hard now, but I at least, like, you know, I'm going to get my secondaries anyways, and I push up on the marker. And then your turn sentence, Satan walks up, and I'm like, you know, I kind of tucked the Spirit Seer down in the corner, and I wanted him behind the wall, but then behind the ruin, but then there was a gap. I just didn't have enough model count. I was like, well, it's more important that I plug the gap and not prevent warriors on the marker than it is to keep the Spirit Seer alive, because the Spirit Seer only adds so much. I'm not really expecting my Wraithguard to do any fighting that game. I just need them to be present on the marker for like a turn or two. Satan goes in, and he epic challenges the Spirit Seer, and I'm like, well, at the very least, right, if I make a few saves on the Spirit Seer and I only lose the Spirit Seer, I still have 10 bodies. I don't care. I'm still blocking that marker. It's like, next turn, if he inevitably whittles me down to like 8 or 7 models, I'm still blocking the marker. That's fine. Mm-hmm. So Satan goes, attacks. First attack kills the Spirit Seer, and then he kills 4 more Wraithguard. I'm like, he has exploding sixes, and he just rolled well and couldn't roll less than a 3 on damage to save his my life, I guess.
Yeah,
and
it was like 3, 4, 3, 4, 5, 6. It was like,
yeah, so he just went like 8 attacks, million hits, 9 wounds. And I was like, yeah, that'll do it. And then just lost the Spirit Seer and half my Wraithguard to one activation of the Satan, which immediately broke the like screening bubble, because now I didn't have enough bases to block it out. So I only got 1 10 that game, and then it was fives from there, where I was hoping to get 2 or 3 tens, and then fives from there.
And also,
it just immediately fell apart. But
I also thought after the game, I had like 2 games in advance against Elder, and I saw like how the Elder can actually win the game without like, I know that you know the matchup and stuff. Like, we go to the team events as well and like speak a lot. And I know you like had to push this, and I cannot score Storm Hostile against you. And then also like you will. This was like, yeah, I had like 2 test games against you, and you in advance, and you didn't. So I think this was like advantage for me in this scenario.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And also just Necrons versus Eldar, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
I was kind of going in like, well, if I go first and roll well and like get lucky, then I can maybe pull this off.
Yes.
And then you go first and roll well, and I'm like, yeah, I wasn't likely to pull this off in the first place, and then I really wasn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, but so, it was also super clean play from you, and everything was like on from point. So what can you do?
Yeah, you can watch it on the Spanish stream. Actually,
it was a stream. Spanish, it was a great game.
Yeah.
Sweet. So brotherly bloodbath. I mean, if you're supposed to roll like that, you know, with your Catan and so on, it's at a tournament like that. So
Something has to be right? So I think, to be on the topic, so I think you in my like experience, you have to be like winning your matchup you're supposed to win, like get lucky on the matchups you are not supposed to win, right? And then you can win the tournament. This is like how it goes. So I got lucky on the games I needed to win, and also the games I was supposed to win. So
I think even if you ask like the I don't know, I mean, you are among the best players in the world, but if you ask anyone, any podcasters and so on, everyone will tell you that it's a mixture of skill and luck. So yeah, that was that from here as well.
I definitely got this feeling at this event. So yeah, and get the right, the 11-inch charge on Yesu's play, then all the, like, I killed like 30 chosen the one turn, then all the stuff, like, my opponent not hitting the one point on secondary and stuff is like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump into game number seven. I think. Arne, let's go with you. Who did you play?
Yeah. I went from round one to the losers bracket, and I played Kyle McCord in the double elimination bracket there. And it was, again, Black Templars. And this time it was basically, it's the exact same list that Jack Harpster was running, I believe. Kyle McCord works with James Harpster in some way or something, and he it's a very aggressive Black Templars list with a bunch of transports and a bunch of Sword Brethren rushing you, and I went first and immediately shot my Warwalkers at his transports and opened up a transport, killed half of another transport, slowed the units inside, blah blah blah, snowballed it from there pretty hard. He basically, it was kind of a repeat of the game versus Oliver, where I kind of like held one flank just with the Shroud Runners, and then the other flank just got mushed by everything else. And then I kind of did the circle around, and he ended up getting a bunch of points on tactical because he drew Storm Hostile and like secure enemy outpost on the turn where he disembarked from his last Impulsor to charge a single Night Spinner holding my home objective, and suddenly he got like a huge point swing, and that made the game look really close and made me really scared for the last turn. Mm-hmm. And then on turn four, I was like, all right, if he draws perfect cards and somehow like maxes out his secondaries, how do I still make sure I win this? And I came up with a silly play where I was like, in his turn four, I Phantasm the Wraithguard 6 inches, like towards his last marker that he was holding. And I was like 20 some inches away from the marker, and I went to my turn. I was like, okay, flat six advance and fire and fade him. So I moved 24 inches in one turn cycle, and then on his turn five, I Phantasm to make sure he holds nothing. Mm-hmm. And I was so just like,
Games like this, do you play your Incarn aggressively? So like you pop the first Rhino, boom, Incarn already there, or do you like reserve him for later?
I held it for the second Impulsor. Because the first Impulsor was standing in the middle, and there was another Impulsor to the right of it, and the Land Raider to the left of it. So I popped that Impulsor, neutered the unit inside, with like Night Spinner slow to a point where they couldn't really go for anything. And then held the Incarn. He pushed up with a second Impulsor. I overwatched that with a Warwalker for like 8 damage, which was funny.
Classic
Elder
stuff.
I put a 6 to hit, and then, or maybe it was 7, right? Like, I put a 6 to hit and then wounded and did like 5 plus 2, 7 damage. Just normal Eldar things.
Backbreaking Eldar things, yes.
Normal Eldar things. So then, once I was like in this position where I had dealt with the first Sword Brethren unit plus Captain, and then the second Sword Brethren plus Captain was on the far right, because I killed the middle one first, and the one on the far left was so far away that it couldn't respond. So the only thing that could respond to the Incarn over there were the aggressors disembarking from the Land Raider. So I wanted to make sure that the Incarn doesn't die to like some Sword Brethren. When that Rhino popped, I popped up the Incarn and then charged the unit and cleaned them up. And then the aggressors killed her because it's fire discipline aggressors. But it was basically the aggressors also just traded for her because I one-shotted the whole squad on my next turn because there was still like Wraithguard and everything around. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of how that worked out.
Okay.
Yeah, that was game 7.
Yeah, sounds like a great game. On both sides, to be honest. All right, Valentin, you played Lachlan Rigg, I think,
yes.
In your next run. So how did that go?
He plays CSM, and I was still in the like winner's bracket at this point, so 0-1 in top 8. And he played CSM. He had like a big brick, undivided, what's it called? The
Accursed Cultist,
yes. And Chosen and stuff. But my biggest fear were the Accursed Cultist. And I did a slight mistake there. I like put the wrong unit, the one with mine, with the four Phenopain, four invulnerable save in front of the Accursed Cultist, and not the other one, because the one with Phenopain and Arm of Contempt actually can withstand the Accursed Cultist from time to time. And I like swapped them, and then he could charge the other unit. So he did, he wiped one unit, and then this game was like, after one unit is wiped, this game is hard, but then I like almost completely killed the other, the accursed unit. Only one guy and the character stayed alive, and then I killed the chosen and stuff. So yet at the end of the game, you had one lord with one wound in a rhino, the accursed cultist guy with one guy in a rhino, Celesk, with one wound, and one other guy with three wounds, and that assassination. And this was in the last turn. I still had could have won this if I killed Celeste in close, shoot her to death in close combat. So my unit is three, can kill one lord, and then charge Celeste and with the command barge and get 12 more points of assassination. But I couldn't kill her in shooting, so I only got 4 points and I lost by 12 or something. Mm-hmm. But like this game was still close after he killed my one of the units in turn two, but also like he played it well. Like I couldn't really afford to epic challenge or anything because there was so much pressure on me. And then he put the models back into the rhino and drove away and stuff. So there was no chance really coming back. But after like his first blow, I controlled objective and stuff. This was a really nice game and like turned out to be close at the end, but mm-hmm. he clearly won this. Yes. So and then I was on the loser's bracket and had my last game after this.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I think at this stage this is what you would expect and would want to see the games to be actually quite close and quite even, yeah. because we have people yeah. of like matching skill. You know, this is like the top level of gameplay in the world, pretty much in singles that you can see. So so yeah, actually a good story. So thanks for that. Arne, your last game, was it against John Lennon?
This right. is where, like, in any other tournament, I would be complaining that I am in loser's bracket with one loss and I have to play against John Lennon. Mm-hmm. But I guess in the top eight of the World Championship, it can be excused.
Everything is possible.
But yeah, this was a super difficult game. I made a pretty large mistake at the start of the game, honestly, in secondary selection, because I kind of misread how the board was. Because the Sandor Ruin, it was... I didn't quite spot this while setting up, and this was on me because everything was like very rushed, and there was the whole like thing going on with the Lennon and Manichima game with the concession there. That was the reason why he was in the loser's bracket against me instead mm-hmm. of me playing against Manichima. So everything was a bit like all over the place, and I didn't realize that we could hold the center ruin from within the center marker from within the ruin. And that's a pretty big blunder on my side. It's a bad thing to miss. But it's also honestly just because I'm not used enough to GW terrain because mm-hmm. I'm so used to like WTC where it's always very like, all right, same layout. You can hold the same things from the same places, but GW terrain is flexible. However, the judges set it up that day. So on this table, it was flexibly set up to a point where you could hold the middle marker from within the center ruin. And I picked Assassinate expecting like a fighty game because I thought the middle marker was open and he would like brawl back and forth over it. And then that was absolutely not what happened because Lennon could just stand with his aggressor brick on the middle marker, putting 4 OC on it, and then 1 CP make it sticky and make it so I take D3 mortal wounds if I move on it. And at that point, I can never take the marker away because mm-hmm. if a OC5 like Swooping Hawk unit walks on that marker, they take D3 mortal wounds. Chances are they're not actually 5 OC anymore. Mm-hmm. If they're 4 or less OC, his marker is sticky. So I cannot mm-hmm. flip that marker with like a normal unit. I have to commit big things like, you know, Wraithguard or whatever.
Yeah, big brain move.
So, yeah, a real big brain move, but also just I just didn't see that coming. It was my first time playing against, well, I think it was everyone's first time playing against that Lennon build of Vanguard. It's just his innovation. And it is one of those very classical things where, like, the list builder's advantage, right? I was on stock standard. Everyone knows what this does, Wraithguard Eldar with triple spinner, which is extremely powerful, and it got me that far, so I really can't complain. But Lennon knew perfectly what all my stuff did, and I had to learn how to play against Vanguard while playing him. And I think it was turn 3 where I figured it out, and I understood how I should have played against it.
Too late.
But
already.
When it's turn 3, when you realize how you should have played against something, you're playing versus John Lennon, yours are late. It's not working anymore. So, I just lost
mistakes.
That game to, like, yeah, no. Well, honestly, he's super forgiving to, like, mistakes, as in he gave me, like, he was super sportsmanlike. He gave me a bunch of, like, all right, I want to do this. Wait, Arne, don't do this. I can just do that, and it'll just fall apart. Remember how my stratagems work.
That's amazing.
It's like, yeah, it's super friendly. Now, this is, this was very much like the learning again to play against Vanguard on the fly, and he could have gotcha'd me to oblivion if he wanted to, and he didn't. He absolutely did not. This was not a learning against Vanguard and getting gotcha. This was a learning against Vanguard and playing the macro wrong because I didn't understand it. But he was super friendly about anything where he could have gotcha'd me, and yeah.
Yeah, but also, yeah, it seems like a theme, because I believe, like, in the games against Manny and so on, where he was also at times at disadvantage, he allowed, like, takebacks and so on. So,
oh yeah,
like,
absolutely,
a real gentleman at the table, absolutely. Yeah,
I will say that he also, I think he likes to play his games as safe as possible. So sometimes I feel like he wants to kind of tell you, all right, this is the situation, you can't do anything about it. And then when you go for something that has like a 10% chance of going really good, like a 90% chance of backfiring for you, he'll be like, oh, remember, this has a 90% chance of backfiring for you, don't go for it. And then you don't go for it. So the 10% chance just goes away because you didn't go for it. I feel like in retrospect, maybe I should have just gone for some of the things. But it is also, again, like, you know, there were maybe chances that I could have rolled really well. But I really don't want to, like, say this was, like, you know, deceitful of him or anything. No, he was just being super honest about what will happen if I try for things. And the honest answer was 90% of the time it'll go bad.
He just planted the seed of doubt and then...
growing inside, yes.
Exactly.
It was a super difficult game, just because of how his army was constructed and how the table was. And then, I feel like if I play him, like, 3 more times, I maybe get him 1 out of those 3 times, right? It's, like, it's one of those, like, I give myself, like, 1 in 3, 1 in 4 odds of winning that game with practice. But without any practice, it was just unwinnable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so kudos to John. And it's actually, again, it's amazing that we're, what, like, 4 months into the edition or something like that? You would think that Space Marines are solved, and then, boom, there comes John Lennon with an ingenious list.
The Codex is
fairly fresh.
But yeah,
true that. But still, it's just cool to see that people are, like, you know, high-level players are able to sort of take a risk and bring...
Oh, yeah.
Like a dark horse list to a tournament, and then it actually performs. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's great to see. So fingers crossed that we see more of that. Valentin, you said that your last game, the description of your last game, is going to take a minute. So humor.
Okay, I will try it in a minute. We are on the topic of trying things. So I tried things in the last game as well. So against CSM again with 10 chosen. So a brick of 10 chosen. So like a unit that can kill me again. And I played against Boris Mitchell from England. And he won overall after this, actually. So yeah. I was going first, I think, and I pushed everything as far as possible into the middle. So he has to take a fight at some point, otherwise I will just control the objective and stuff. And he didn't know the matchup, and he was like, what are you doing? He was like literally 45 minutes or something looking at the table. I was like, what the fuck is going on? What are you doing? He started swearing and stuff. And I was like, this was so funny. So this was very, very nice experience for me. It was like really getting him on this. And like we are talking to each other and he was like, what the fuck is going on? He repeated this like 10 times or something. Mm-hmm. And he didn't like, so I'm the one of the killiest army in the game. And you put your whole army in front of me. What is going on? So, and then after this time, he like tried to go for me and actually kill one of my scrubs. And with the 10 shows, like it was close, but he rolled very well. And then this can happen. It's like 50-50 or something. Mm-hmm. But then like we had a brawl and we like stabbing each other. And I think actually I could have run this game. So he shot one unit to like back to my home base. And the other unit he charged with the Chosen. So mm-hmm. he like split fired on the Titan as well. And like he shot like his obliterator and stuff all into the Titan. He lost one wound and he was like, okay, this is going to be hard. And then in my command phase, I regenerated him full again. So, and he was like, he's regenerating as well. Why did I shot at him? I don't know. And then, but in this turn, in the second turn, when my first unit was dead and the second unit was like crippling behind the wall, I decided to like stay behind the wall, wait for one turn and then go out. I got out with all the rest in the middle, but then on the one flank where the other unit's supposed to be, the unit that was just crippled, I like stayed in the ruin. And then this turn, I should have like going out, charged something, then something will kill a model. I will weep and use the ghost arc, and then this unit is full again, wrap a rhino or something, be on the objective, deny primary and get me five points on primary. And this would have been enough in the respective to win me the game, but I was too scared in this moment to go out because I thought, oh, there are just 8 or 10 models, so they're going to die. And also have the resurrection orb in this command phase as well. So I should have gone out there and I scored the objective, but also like, then he played this very well. He like killed all the rest and scored everything else. So, and put the pressure on me actually. So yeah, this was a really, very nice game. Again, this was like the second best game of like the most fun game of all them, but like the second best game of like clear stuff and so on. And yeah, Boris was a very nice guy. This was like, yeah, this was a very nice experience of playing Warhammer. And like, nobody was swearing at the tournament and he was like starting to swear like 10 minutes straight. And I was like, this is nice. Yeah.
Finally, someone.
Yeah, really. I like swearing a lot.
Valentine
so.
Just wants to make people confused about the yes. game and about and his art. Trigger people.
Was,
that's why he thrives playing Necrons. He's yes. like, ha, 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 ha. You don't this know what's happening.
This was peak confusion on his side, and I was like, this is the best time of my life. So
I live for those moments.
Yeah, for real. Like Necrons, so people can frustrated playing against them, and like this is frustrating for me as well sometimes. So because people like get frustrated because they're playing against the army and like nothing is dying and stuff. But also like if this is on a level where the opponent like understands what's going on and also like, okay, I just going to try it again. And then this is nice. This is funny. I like this. Yeah.
That's so cool. All right. So we're done with your games. I just have a bunch of questions to sort of wrap it all up because I've kept you here for way too long, but I need to ask this. First of all, I wanted to ask for more, but let's stick to one major takeaway from the event for each one of you. So Arne, let's start with you. Like, do you have anything, any realization, any eurekas from the event, anything that you want to share with our viewers perhaps?
I mean, honestly, I'm like, I don't have like a big thing where I was like, I should have done that better. And I'm honestly happy with how I ended up. Mm-hmm. So I think I was correct to stick to what I had practiced. Mm-hmm. So, and I think in the end, like, for the most innovative list and the most like, and the craziest new innovation got second place, but like, I couldn't have pulled it up. I didn't have a new innovation like that in the chamber that I could have played. And just being like true to what I'd practiced with Eldar, got me, you know, to sixth. So
You got your reps. Yeah. You brought what you were confident in, and it paid off, essentially.
Yes.
I think so. Valentin, any takeaways from, you know, it could be about your games, it could be about your army, it could be about the event.
I got the question completely different. So I was like, we're talking about armies. And no, I
could be anything.
Yeah. Like for army preparation stuff, I was like, I will stick to my guns. I played three. So this was completely right in retrospect. This was completely right. But from the event, this was like my first, like, really international event. I was on WTC, but on WTC, I didn't know anyone except like the German guys. And this was like, we are playing in another country. I go through the table, I talk like to the guy, and then we disappeared again, right? So I had like, but at this event, I'm thriving on being events, really. This is like, after every event, I'm like, could we be next time like 2 weeks on this event? So I have to spend all the time I want to spend there with the guy, with the people, and talk to guys to like really do it.
Enjoy the company as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was like the first like international thing. And I really, really liked it to like, especially talk to people from other countries and stuff. Mm-hmm. This was like a really nice experience. So I obviously talk to people from other countries, but like I also learned this on the Polish Masters. There, when we like with Warhammer together, we are like getting us on a different level. You know, we are on the Warhammer level, and we connect on this level. And it's not like I'm a tourist in your country, and you're like, oh, this is a tourist. Like, this is like, this is a Warhammer friend of mine, so we can talk like friends to each other. And this is like, I really, really like this. And this was with other guys at the event as well. So this is like my takeaway on the social aspect of the game.
There's this common language, and it's called Warhammer 40,000.
But also you can get like on other topics, right? From the Warhammer topic, and just like, okay, nice. So I obviously I want to talk about Warhammer, right? And like on the last day, I don't know if you play Magic. I had my Magic cube with me, and it was like, I played against a Spanish guy, Alessandro, and he played at the WTC, and I knew he was playing Magic as well. And then Joel Larsen from Sweden and Magic Pro was apparently there, and he was like, okay, I want to set up a draft. So I walked around, and like we set it up a draft with eight different guys from different countries, and like we drafted a round of Magic. This was like my peak experience at the end. So like, this was like my takeaway. And also the event was nice. Like, there are all time things to improve, like chest locks and stuff. I think this stuff gotta be, what they're gonna say, like, people said that before, that what kind of stuff gonna be like improved in the next year, maybe. Yeah. And yeah, this like the positive thing about the events, but also like I had a really bad experience at the event, and I don't want to go into details. It had to do with one of my games, and I think most of the people that were there know about it, but I don't want to be like hanging on a thing, you know. So, but like this taught me also a lesson. This was a really bad experience, and I stayed up the half of the night and stuff, where I was like this, giving the chills, but also this like gave me another step in the like the mental game thing on the table, right? So when I started playing Warhammer, like people told me like, yeah, they're gonna be hard games with people trying to like cheat on you and getting
win at all costs and stuff.
Yeah, and I got caught on playing on time one time. So a player before chest top reinvented got me on time, so we played three rounds because he was playing so slow, and I didn't realize it in time. And this was a big lesson. This never happened again after this for me. And I think this lesson I had on this tournament, I hope will never happen to me as well again. But also, like, I mastered the, not master, but like I got over the situation and I handled this correctly, I think. But also, like, this, that I had the experience now, and I will have it again. So
My question all boring compared to you. I was like, what did I learn from it?
Yeah, that
was very good. That's also what I was going for. But I mean, Arina, do you want to add anything then?
I do, yeah, because I just want to second the notion of like the social nature of the event. Just that was absolutely awesome. I played against like multiple people that I like no one talked to online, and then getting to play them in person is always awesome. And I got to meet a ton of new people. And I think like after the event on like the fourth day where I wasn't playing anymore, I must have spent like probably an hour just hanging out with Taroxer and Raven, the Spanish players, just kind of chatting about our games and how everything went, and just kind of like just 40k and then getting into a bunch more like esoteric topics. It was just awesome. It's so nice to just like play against people and then the next day just hang out and chat, or like Jeremy where Curie, where I ended up sitting with him the next day working on Votan lists together. So it's just that kind of thing. I love it about events. And yeah, I'll cut myself short there.
It's interesting. I remember this quote from I think it's in 80 Days Around the World. There is a book like that, and there was a quote that the world has shrunk, and in that book it was because of like modes of transportation and so on that the world is has become smaller. I think here, due to TTS, Discord, events like that, people starting to travel and so on, the world of Warhammer has also like shrunk, and we are much closer to one another now. So yeah, we get to interview people like you, for example, which hasn't happened before, but I hope it will happen again. Last question, and I will let you go. Is this event somehow considered part of your application towards the German WTC team?
What?
But is it like, will your performance at this event be taken into consideration when you apply for Team Germany? Or
I
is
hope
your
so.
Spot on Team Germany already like...
If you hear this, please sign me in. I got top 8.
Come on.
I don't know. I think so, though. But yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I know the people who are... involved in making the selection. I'm pretty sure they're taking it into account. They try to take everything into account. Mm-hmm. We both played in 2023 this year. And I think people were also happy with our performances. So I think we've got very solid chances. Mm-hmm.
Can only speak for myself. I think Arne's spot is safe. I kind of talk about mine. I'm not sure, but I think this was a good sign for me. But also from last year, I learned like that the performance we had on the WTC, for me especially, I was like focusing on my games, on my list and stuff, and I only played like most of the time single players. So for me personally, I try this year. I only played on single player. I played at every big single player tournament in Germany. And I went to WTC on team tournaments, and then to the Polish Masters and the Pyro Cup. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I just want to change like my mindset and my experience with team tournaments. So I decided to go go on more team tournaments. So like, if there's a big team tournament in the month and also two big single tournaments, I just want to make sure I go to the team tournament, and then I can look if I go to the single player event as well. This is my learning for and like my way to like getting better in the team thing, and I hope this will like pay out in the end. I can play WTC again this year, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Guys, I have kept you here for long enough, and my wife just, without saying anything, she just opened the door and let the dogs in, which means it's high time for me to finish because I need to walk the dogs. So I had a bunch of other questions, but I guess that I will have to leave that for another time. So you've been a great pleasure. Congrats one more time on taking like amazing
Thank you very much.
at the event. And I do hope that we can have you over on Contact Lost again, because you're just a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Yeah, I didn't feel kept, by the way. I feel it was a pleasure for me as well.
I'm pretty sure the two of us kept you at this
point. Yeah, I got the feeling as well.
At the beginning, I was like, I'm tired. I wonder how I will. And then my energy went like, yes, as I started talking about 40K. That always happens.
It was a real pleasure for me as well. Thank you for the invite. This was like, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Looking forward to be here. And I hope seeing each other on the WTC and looking forward to the next year's WCW because we both got tickets already. So maybe we will talk. And maybe also we'll thanks there. Again to the Polish community for me, sponsoring me and giving me a chance to compete. And thank you very much, guys. Yeah,
we'll happily do it again, I'm sure. Right. To our listeners, to summarize this, let us know if there are any other players from around Europe that you would like to hear about. If you're listening from America and you would like to find out more about the European scene, let us know and we will invite people and interview them for you. Also, check out our Facebook page because on the Facebook page we do our thematic days. So Meissen's Monday, Tournament Tuesday, Thoughtful Thursday, Painter Die Friday, and so on. So there is plenty of stuff outside of YouTube that you can also check out that we provide. And we hear it's kind of good, so do check it out. And last but not least, I hear we will be doing live coverage from the Pyra Cup at the end of February. So that will hopefully be an opportunity to talk in person. That's amazing. So do subscribe, like, and follow us to get at least that, if not our other videos, then at least the live coverage from Pyra Cup, because it's going to be one hell of an event. And I'll finish with that. Thank you, everyone, and until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.